then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's October the 23rd, 2014. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, to begin with this week, I want to go over something I've talked about before on this show. This weekend, I had a computer crisis here at the Batcave. I won't go into detail, but I lost some stuff on my primary machine, and I'm having to use my backup computer, and I'm having to reload a lot of stuff, and some of the things I lost were some of my stored Radio Free Northwest archives. I'm in the process of getting them back, but let me emphasize this yet again to all of you. You need to download these podcasts, preferably all of them, as great a project as that will be, and keep them either on your hard drive, or if they take up too much space, on an external hard drive or other storage space. These podcasts are a large part of my legacy. And I like to think that if something happens to me, or if we lose both the NorthwestFront.org and NorthwestFront.net websites through some kind of enemy interference, as many people as possible will have their own copies of them. Now, one of our people in Texas recently sent me 3 cardboard boxes containing a complete set of Radio Free Northwests on CD, a collection going all the way back to Episode 1 up until Episode 230, for which I am deeply grateful. Now, some of you may decide to make your own copies on CD for distribution, as I've asked you to, and if you do, you should keep a set for yourselves. Now, the point I'm trying to make here, comrades, whether you are a true believer or whether this show is just your weekly entertainment, is don't take all this for granted. There is a chance that someday it's not going to be here, so if nothing else, make sure that you make your own personal RFN and NF memory lane by saving all this stuff for yourselves in your own personal copies. Now, that also goes for things like the Northwest novels. Now, I know a lot of my friends are going to tear their hair when I say this, but I will actually send you copies of the Northwest novels for free in PDF format. That means you'll have to read the novels on your computer, or else print your own copy on your printer, but I didn't write these books to make money. I wrote them to convey information and a moral imperative. Next up, I have an email from Comrade Troy in Scotland. Troy is one of our European comrades who's seriously attempting to come here. I referred him to the special Radio Free Northwest podcast I did a couple of years ago, and this is his response. Dear HAC, I listened to it at the time, he's referring to my special immigration podcast. It left me with more questions than answers. I remember you stated it's near enough impossible to be done. Surely, though, there are others who successfully completed a transatlantic immigration to the Pacific Northwest since that time. And surely, if I or any other European receives a job offer, that's enough to secure official permanent residence. Now, what attitude do employers have towards Europeans generally? Is it likely that they have a higher regard for Europeans and will hire them over others, putting aside considerations of experience and/or qualifications? I don't know about that. Anyway, I'll go on. As things stand, I will have been unemployed 6 years in February. My previous experience is administrative in nature, and I possess a diploma in business, one rung on the ladder under an actual degree. And yes, I thoroughly regret not training in a practical trade rather than what's basically just bloody office work, but I can't turn back the clock. At this early stage, my biggest concern is whether I'll be able to secure lasting employment or not. Now, once I get better internet access, I'll open some of these queries to Europeans at the NF Forum and see what they say. It's very important that I'm able to communicate with those who have already completed a transatlantic scouting trip and better yet, an immigration, since I shall essentially be aiming to follow in their footsteps. Kitsap County looks wonderful, quite similar to where I am, which coincidentally also has a history of Viking settlement. P.S. finished my hardback copy of Freedom's Sons the other day. It fulfilled its purpose excellently. Well done, Harold. It's a true milestone. I'll be posting an Amazon review within the next day or two. I recommend encouraging people who have read the novels to do that. It definitely influenced folks' purchasing decisions. Okay, Troy, let me respond with candor. First off, yes, Europeans do legally immigrate here, and it's not completely a matter of super skills. Not completely. A lot of it seems to be a matter of just plain old-fashioned connections, i.e. they get somebody on this side of the pond who is really pulling for them and who can pick up a phone and call somebody over here and get something done, which would take 6 months to get done through the U.S. consulate in Glasgow. Or more likely, they've got someone who is able to hire an immigration attorney who has the necessary connections with ICE or INS. I'm not sure. I think INS does still exist in order to process paperwork. The ICE is the muscle end, except ever since Obama abolished the nation's borders, they don't seem to have that much to do. Now, by the by, Troy, the abolition of the borders of the United States by Barack Hussein Obama, with a stroke of his pen, does not apply to you. You are not a Salvadorian child, and you are not a Liberian nigger with Ebola. You still have to obey the rules. Anybody with a white skin still has to obey the rules. Now, the main thing for employment, as always, is skills, or more importantly, the pieces of paper that say that you have these skills. It's, in reverse, the same situation I was faced with when I tried to settle in London in 1991. It doesn't matter what you can do. It matters what somebody else says you can do and what kind of piece of paper you have that says you can do it. Office workers, unfortunately, we have plenty of. All good Democrats willing to give the ruling party their vote and their salary deductions in exchange for their jobs. Imagine the labor-controlled councils back in the UK, and you'll get some idea of what you're going to be dealing with. Also, Troy, you have a big problem in that you are male. In this country, 90% of all office work and non-technical cubicle jobs are done by women. Now, we had a Swedish guy who made a serious effort to get some kind of job in the Seattle area starting 2 years ago, and he hasn't made it yet, largely because in Sweden, like so many in socialist countries, he's an office bureaucrat. Over here, non-technical office work is quite often a political patronage job. It's reserved for women, minorities, minority women, and other Democrat or labor union connections. Again, I say, look at your own Labour Party over there in the UK. Look at some of the patronage setups they've got in places like London and the big cities, so forth and so on. Unless, of course, you can get in on a buggery ticket, which I presume you have no inclination to do. Now, back in the early 90s, when I worked as a temp at a major international corporation in Raleigh, we had one whole department occupying almost all the one floor in a big building that was nothing but faggots in very flashy shirts and ties. Now, this was the not uncommon story of one of them getting in and working his way up to a supervisory position, and all of a sudden the bugger boys were multiplying like cockroaches in that one department. Faggots are a distinct and recognized Democrat constituency over here, and I suppose it might be possible for a sexually normal European to sneak in by claiming to be a fruit fly. Although I've never heard of it being tried, and I wouldn't want anybody who would do such a thing. I once lost out myself on a government job in Miller County, Arkansas, because despite the urging of the interviewer, who was a woman who really wanted to help me out, I would not check a box on a form stating that I was an Indian for some affirmative action quota. Now, marrying an American can work, but not necessarily. Depends on what kind of immigration law you've got, and again, what kind of personal connections you've got. I think I mentioned on that podcast that at my last regular job before I broke age 50 and became unemployable myself, an American girl I knew was leaving and heading out to the UK to spend a lovely winter in Cheshire because the US immigration bureaucracy wouldn't let her British husband stay in the country while his paperwork was being processed, and I think they had an American-born child as well. Basically, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. This country does not want white immigration. They want people with black and brown skins who will know which side of their bread is buttered and who will vote Democrat when the time comes. This is how the Democrats are building their artificial majority to ensure a future one-party state. Like all white boys, Troy, you've pretty much lost out. You're on the short end of the stick. You've been dealt a losing hand, and until you and all the other white boys decide you're going to kick over the table, it's going to be a pretty rough ride for you. Anyway, keep me posted on how it's going. Let me know if there's anything practical I can do by way of assistance. And here's Andy.
Greetings from Seattle, comrades. I'm Andy Donner, and you can't escape. There isn't any reason to try running away from diversity in any form, whether it's masked as perversion, funny-colored people-like organisms, or feminism. You especially can't escape by moving to Idaho like so many people try to do. Idaho is a gay marriage state now. What a bunch of filthy Idahomos you all are. Okay, I'll lay off you Idahoans, but don't tell me you guys didn't see this coming with Larry Craig, okay? No, wait. I said I'd lay off. Yes, I'm aware this is a result of the courts and not the state itself, but that's somewhat academic, because you can't escape. Well, okay, you could, but it would only be to the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport to toe-tap your days away. Sorry, I said I'd lay off. But I find myself inclined to rub salt in the wound. You see, we in the states of Washington and Oregon are frequently told we're in so-called liberal states. Okay, bigger cities on or near the coast derive their politics, especially their acceptance of perversion, from the non-white masses in the urban areas. Because these areas are more populated than the rest of the state, the decent white people are outvoted by the mud mobs and the handful of actual lefty whites in the cities. In other words, the situation we live under isn't really any more voluntary than Idaho's recent development. The feigned moral superiority of moving to Idaho or Montana is just that. Feigned. You can't escape. I can't escape. And trust me, I tried. Shortly after Obamacare became law in early 2010, I deliberately and knowingly went full-on racist, and actually started the process to leave America and move to New Zealand. It would have been trivial for me to actually make the move, but the situation there, especially from a racial angle, isn't much different than here. You see, it might be 20 years behind us, but the trend is set, and demographics are demographics. Once I got wind of that, I essentially gave up on the idea of avoiding the problems here. A mere handful of months later, though, I found the Northwest Front. Unlike quite a few of you out there, I was more than ready to actually confront the problems here rather than try to avoid them. 1 year later, I came home to Seattle. Look now, guys, I get it. I really do. Any one of us would rather just find a place we can pretend bad things aren't being done to white people. Such a place would probably have decent economic opportunity and nice, peaceful, rural parcels of land where we could build large raised ranch homes for our wives and 2.3 children. And each of these hamlets would have a small all-white school where those children could actually learn. And it goes without saying that there would be your preferred choice of church or religious activity, if any, available. Oh yeah. And everyone else would have their choice of religion as well, as long as you approve of it, since of course your preferred outfit will run the town. There would be one news station, and it would deliver nothing but shock and horror shows of filth and depravity from the outside world, while simultaneously assuring you that such things can never happen where you live because... something. No, really, I agree with you all. That would be great. Escape always feels good, but you can't escape. It's way past time each and every one of you accepts the awful elements of politically correct Judeo-society, which you are so eager to opt out of, will most certainly hunt you down and force you to watch, then approve, and then participate. And you had better not in any way dissuade your children from doing the same, or else you'll be punished in unimaginable ways, one of which is watching your precious family being served up to the gaping maw of the depraved social machine you thought you opted out of. If you get nothing else from what I'm saying today, please understand that trying to escape from and opt out of today's infernal order can only result in total failure. What you're trying to attain simply does not exist. It doesn't matter where you go or what political or spiritual stances you adopt. It won't work. But then why would someone do this? Well, escape is the exact opposite of confrontation. While it's true that confrontation without a viable plan or strategy is foolish, this isn't something we need to concern ourselves with. When I first found the party, my main interest was in the proposed method of liberating the Northwest American Republic. This problem has been dealt with so many times in history and on Radio Free Northwest that I won't go into this again right now. But not confronting the civilization-scale disaster you're running from only guarantees those who come after you won't have the chance to do the same. In all likelihood, you're running directly to the fate you seek to avoid. Since you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, accept that you're damned regardless and actually move towards confronting your racial enemies as the Butler Plan calls for. You can't escape. You're either going to be consumed by the Judaic mammon worshippers, or you're going to liberate yourself. Don't try to substitute avoidance for the difficult task of confrontation. Not only is it morally repugnant, but the rationale for doing so should have been demonstrated to be utterly bankrupt because of the legal events which prompted my subject today. It goes without saying that the government is on dubious legal ground in declaring the Idaho State Constitution unconstitutional. It goes without saying that anyone in the government who would in any way permit the existence of or union between sexual deviants is wholly evil and without justification. No brand of religion our race has ever employed is remotely supportive of such aberration, and those of you calling this fact out are entirely right to do so. But however valid your objections to what is being done to you, none of them matter, because the people trying to hurt our race will simply pay them no mind. You cannot escape. Stop trying. Free your race. Hail victory, comrades.
This is some Irish Gaelic Shannos music, and the group is called Night Noise.
Hello, folks. This is Stefan and Annie here in the southeastern United States, and we just want to update you on our progress towards getting up there to the Northwest, and then we have something else that we think is pretty important to talk about. So, how about it?
So, we are still progressing that way. Our plan is to make a scouting trip at the end of the year, first part of the year, and then to be moving to the area the first part of next year. Obviously, we don't want to move in the winter, as the folks up there have reminded us. So I have been kissing nigger and Jew ass. I believe we told you Stefan and I are in a situation that many white people are, having a hard time finding a job because the white man goes to the back of the line with only the white woman ahead of him behind the nigger, the Jew, the gay, the lesbian, the disabled, and the veteran. So kind of in that order. So kissing enough nigger ass, I have become unemployed again because some things you just cannot live with. So if you find yourself listening to this podcast and you're thinking, wow, that sounds like me, go to the website, listen to all the previous podcasts, and come with us because we need everybody we can to get to the Northwest, to the Pacific Northwest. So that's kind of where we are. We'll keep you updated. We have some exciting things that we're and other ideas we're coming up with. We're also on the website with different pages and everything, so you can kind of follow us there too. I'm trying to get that updated as well. Okay, when I'm talking about the website, I'm talking about northwestfront.net. There is a link on there for the Northwest Front Forum, and that is where we've got some ideas out there, and you can find a page that Stefan and I are keeping up with. Yep. It says Stefan and Annie. It's under just general discussion topics, and okay. There's one about moving to the Northwest and ideas.
All right. Yeah, she handles that for the most part. You know, I look at it here and there, but that's her thing. So,
yeah.
All right. Now, what I wanted to talk about today, this is another very important part of the situation here that affects white people everywhere, really, except perhaps maybe in some place that I don't know about. In fact, in every white nation that I can think of on earth, this is a problem. And we have enough problems of our own that are self-inflicted. And this is sort of a self-inflicted problem. We inflict on ourselves, what, the character problem that's been talked about so much on these podcasts. And we have the fear problem. We're afraid of the mailman, Harold says. We're afraid of losing our jobs and all these other things that we're afraid of, why we can't do anything for our situation. But what else? What are the other problems that we have? Materialism?
Yeah.
Want to comment on that one a little bit?
Ladies that are listening, I don't mean to call you out, but a lot of times the guys are trying to please the ladies because the ladies are all about this stuff. To be able to survive and for our race to survive, you got to let go of the stuff. That's just all there is to it. And it takes a certain maturity and a certain willingness to do that. It doesn't mean you have to do without everything, but you really, to get started, you got to not make it about the stuff. So that's one of the things we kind of killed ourselves with is everybody wants all the latest gadgets and things like that. So.
Yeah. And by the stuff, Annie means, this is how we refer to it amongst ourselves, but what she means is people that are materialistic and they are in their jobs for the money and
keep up with the Joneses, have to have the vacations, have to travel. And generally, if you're on Facebook all the time, you're probably one of those people that, and I don't mean that offensively, but just the way it is. If you're worried about what everybody else thinks about you and what they, and want them to know everything about what you're doing in your life, you're probably need to kind of step back and reevaluate where you really want to be. Because if you're a white person, that's not going to work for you when everything falls apart.
Well, that could be. There's some people, I think, too, that are they just are genuinely greedy and just want the stuff, don't necessarily need the recognition for it or the look at me aspect of it.
Right. But there's a lot of us out here who are not. So
we've got all these self-inflicted problems, character, fear, materialism, short attention spans is another thing.
Yeah, I got us off topic. Sorry.
It's all right. Really, for our situation everywhere in the world, this other problem is the white birth rate. And that in Russia, it's a problem. And that is probably one of the few places on earth where, you know, the political situation is favorable in any small amount at all to whites. But the Russians have a serious problem, just like we have here and in Western Europe as well. We are only having, if we're lucky, enough children to replace ourselves, not to grow. In many places, it's not even enough to replace ourselves.
Yeah, I don't think we're even hitting that mark either.
Right. I think in Germany, I think it's one child, and that's for one couple, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's either one child for one couple or one child per person, but that's not enough for the replacement because all those aren't going to have children. Some of them are going to get sick and die and things like that before they are able to reproduce. But anyway, I don't know anybody that really talks about it that much. It seems like something that people whisper about and they don't really want to address it. So we thought we'd address it here. And here are some things that we uncovered researching this. Non-Hispanic whites are now a minority of births. That's not new. Part of the problem, though, is interracial unions. Now, that's another issue. We found stats from the Pew Research Center that say 29% of whites, 29%, have an immediate family member or a close relative that's of a different race. Yeah. Not a good sign.
I guess.
Yeah, white mothers tend to be college educated and in their late 20s to early 30s. Now think about that. If they're having their first child at 30 years old, that's already at least 10 years off of the time that they can have kids. that's 30 to 50% of their childbearing years they're giving up for what? These other things like materialism and job?
For the stuff, and to make a secure future for those women that are out there working. I've been a working mom my whole life too. So ever since I've been a mother, my child went back to daycare and I was working when he was 5 weeks old. So what it tells us is that we are pushing our daughters and our young women to pursue a career rather than to have families and to grow our race. So I think that's really important. When I hear someone say that a teenager is pregnant, and I hear that frequently in the line of work I'm in, when it's a white person, a white teenager, I'm like, yay, you know, what a blessing. Because even though it changes their life, it is a blessing. And we need to get that message out to other folks.
Yes. So would you say the reason for this problem is, what is it? It's a combination of things. Is it too much trouble to raise kids these days? Is it that couples don't stay together to share the responsibilities?
And my personal opinion is the family unit does not stay together. That's a huge thing. But other than that, the cost of living and the cost of what we have become accustomed to having in our lives requires the woman to work. So people don't understand sacrificing and having less because they want their children to have the most and to have better than them. Personally, I grew up being told you don't need a man. You need to be independent. You need to work. You need to support yourself. And I think we've carried that message way beyond what it should have been carried with a lot of folks our age. And then the younger people, I think they're just trying to survive. And that's the only thing they know. There's not enough of the family unit together in enough places consistently where they see an example of what they should be doing.
So having said that, then what are some solutions to this? Definitely, we want to encourage young whites to have more children, don't we?
Right. We do.
I mean, that's the obvious thing.
Right. And for those of you who are listening to the podcast, who have got young people in your life that are 20s, mid-20s in college, pursuing a career, if you're of like mind like us, start having those conversations with them. Start trying to get them involved in things. Stefan and I recently, it was almost unbelievable. We went to an event just this past weekend and we saw only white people, young people, but they were in their 25, 30s.
Probably about early to mid 30s, most of them.
Yeah. Now, this was one community in our area that we have not seen before that does not get out like this very often. They're not any kind of group or anything. It's just a community. And we saw dads dancing with their daughters to white music. Mamas dancing with their sons. I mean, little kids, you know.
Let's just say that this is a small town out in the country. This isn't like around the cesspool of some of the larger areas around here.
Right. But we saw people talking and visiting, and that's what we want you to do with your young people. So part of that solution is let's start steering our kids who are childbearing years and the ones that are coming up to the family unit. We've got to start pushing the family unit and how important it is to stay together and to stay close. And be good brothers and sisters, staying together and communicating and things like that. I think that's one of the solutions.
Right. What do you say about this idea that I think exists in people's minds about there's no jobs and you don't want to have kids because you don't want to be dependent on the government? And this is the kinds of things that I think young people are being told.
Yeah, they are. You know, we talk about this on almost a daily basis because of the line of work I'm in the medical field. We have people who are not even citizens of this country coming in and taking advantage of our welfare system and our Medicaid and all these things. We have niggers doing it. We have half-breeds doing it. We have everybody's taking advantage of this system except the white people that could just jump on that train too. Now, obviously, I'm not saying that this is the way we want to progress as a country and in our own area. We'll be able to take care of each other. But if you're white and you're thinking that there's not enough money and there's not any jobs to have any children, you know what? Go ahead and have some kids because we need you. We need you to help us keep our race. And that system is put in place. All of us other white people that are working that have found a job would like for you to do that because our tax dollars are going to the spics and the niggers and the illegals and everybody except who it needs to be going to. So take a step up and take advantage of the system that has been working against us.
Right. Demographically, the other groups are using this. There's no reason why we can't use this to reproduce our own kind and live to fight another day.
Right. We're going, you know, the whole economy and everything's going to hell anyway. So go ahead and get in there and have as many kids as you can and take advantage of that system before it does go in. There's not that opportunity.
Right. We know a rather poor young man. He's not that young. He's probably about 35 that comes and cuts our grass here. And he's a very religious young man. And he has a very large family. How many kids does he have, by the way? Do we know?
Five. The last one was number five.
What did he tell you about?
He was telling me a relative of his came up to him and said, oh, your wife's pregnant again. And he said, oh, yeah. And he's so excited and everything. And they live hand to mouth. He's got his own business and she stays at home as a stay-at-home mother raising those white children. And he said, my kids don't have all the gadgets. They don't have cell phones. They don't have video games, but they get out in the yard and play, and they really are smart kids, and she takes the time with them. He said that his family member came to him and said, I had a dream last night, and God told me in my dream, God came to me and said, you didn't need to have any more children. And so he said, I said, well, what did you say to her? He said, well, everybody's guilting me about having all these kids. He said, I told her if God thought that, he should have told me and not her. So I thought that was just the funniest thing. But he's being guilted because he is having children. And that's one of the other things for the solution is let's don't guilt our young people. Let's pick them up and support them and help them any way we can.
Let's support them and encourage them to have children, not to tell them not to do it and make them feel ashamed and make them afraid of having them.
I guarantee you, if you have a young person in your life and they have a child at an early age, that is not going to be a negative for you ever. I don't know anybody that's been a negative. As hard as it made that young person's life, that child, children are wonderful. White children are wonderful.
Right. That's what the 14 words is about. If every couple had four or five kids, I think things would change in a generation. We'd have a lot less work to do in other areas, I think.
Right, right.
So anyway, we're running out of time here, so we'll probably do another one of these soon. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah. We always have plenty to talk about. And hope you don't mind the comfortable nature in which we do it. And I do get off topic sometimes. I think it's kind of fun for you to kind of see who we are. And we're just real everyday people, just like you. Just struggling to try to figure out what we're supposed to do. We feel like we're not quite in the right place and like we don't belong in this world that we see around us. So that is why we're going to the Pacific Northwest. I've been a little bit under the weather with no health care, so my voice may sound a little bit different this time unless you can fix that.
You're fine.
We wish you the best. Get to the website. Give us some feedback. Give us some ideas. We want to get some interaction, and we'll be back again soon.
With a different topic.
Yes.
See you.
Bye.
Okay, we got the trucker coming up next. Now, one thing I want to say is that when I had my computer problems this weekend, I lost a number of files. I am not totally sure why, but a couple of those were audio files that the trucker had sent me over the past week or so. And this one appears to be garbled in one place, and I'm not quite sure why that is. I know it's not from my editing, but for some reason, it seems to kind of skip and jump there a bit. I don't know. This could be the effect of my weird computer mess. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know that I did notice that. But since I'm kind of short of trucker stuff this week, I figured I'd go ahead and put this one on.
Westbound and down, 18 wheels are rolling. Are we going to do what they say can be done? Oh, we've got a long way to go, and a short time to get there. I'm westbound just like a bandit run. If you put hard on the pedal, son, never mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we gotta run to make.
The trucker coming at you from the homeland. As I said in my last little piece about the power consumption and all that back east, another thing to consider is the water. I know the Ogallala, I think that's how you pronounce it, aquifer, is drying up, and they're having to drill deeper and deeper to acquire water, where out here in the homeland, we really don't have much of a water shortage. Not like I say, down there in the south, Lake Mead is at dangerously low levels, and Las Vegas and Arizona are going to be running out of water because agricultural. And if water, where we still have water up here, that'd be another reason. And we don't just grow apples like you normally see the Washington State apples. We also do other produce, and we also grow corn and wheat and soybeans, and I'm not sure if we do rice up here or not. But owl feathers, see a lot in eastern Hawaii and stuff. You know, it's, they get their water out of the Columbia River Basin and whatnot. So, yeah, we definitely have an abundance of reservoirs holding water in them for both power production. You going through multiple dams, starting off, I think, the first one in the line, I believe it's the Grand Coulee Dam, and then I don't even know all the names of the other ones down through the way. I know the pretty sure the last one in the lineup of the dams there on the Columbia is the Bonneville Dam down by just shy of Portland. But yeah, that's another good reason to be packing your things up in this way. Like I've said before, I'll touch on it again, especially for you younger comrades and comradettes, if you pardon the pun there. Trucking is not just for the guys. There's a lot of gals out here trucking too. I think, believe you have to be 21 to get a CDL, and my way to do it would be, my suggestion to save you some money and stuff is find a community college near you that has truck driving school and go through that and be choosy about the company you drive for, because some of them will just shaft you. So definitely do your homework and stuff and try to, don't really care much for the bigger outfits like Swift and stuff, because you're more of a name than a number. We do have ones up here in the Northwest that, like Interstate and Gordon, are the two, couple of the big ones, and they also have hiring areas in other areas of the country. So if you go and get hired on by them, you could move your stuff up a little bit at a time in the truck and, you know, put it in storage where you're at now and ship it a little bit at a time up here and put it in a storage unit up here. Save up your nickels, dimes, and pennies till you have enough for your first, last, and security deposit in utilities. And that way you can try to not get into debt and stuff. I'm not sure how Mr. Covington is on the Dave Ramsey program, but you know, I would suggest trying to stay out of debt as much as possible. And here, get your P's and Q's together and get your assets and asses up here. Yep, I think that'll be about it. Like I say, I'm trying to keep these where I can email them until I figure out a better way to go and get my little short snippets over to the podcast. So, all right, comrades, stay safe, drive safe, and hope to see you up here in the homeland soon. This is the Trucker, signing off for now.
They say, can you go? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch your bandit run.
This is Ivan Rebrov.
shoulder.
Okay, we're here this week with Comrade Charles Martel. We also got Don and AJ, and we're going to have not exactly a panel discussion. We're just going to basically sit here and shoot the chat for a while. So Charles just got back from, believe it or not, Cuba.
All right, that's the workers' paradise to you, buddy.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
Well, it's very interesting down there because after Castro got through kicking out everybody that didn't want to be there and all the mentally ill and criminals, the only people left in Cuba are people who want to be there, and everybody makes about $100 a month, and most everything's supplied, like gasoline and food and stuff like that. So I never saw a bunch of people that were kind of so happy to be there. People are a lot more vocal about the situation than I've expected to in a totalitarian country.
Well, that's one of the things I've always thought about our republic here in the Northwest when we do attain it, and we will. I mentioned this in Freedom Sons, where they described the long lines on the interstate going south, California people, white liberals and various people with things to hide and various people who believe all the propaganda, fleeing the country for the United States. And yet at the same time, in the northbound lanes, you've got an equal number of people fleeing the United States into the Republic. A lot of people want to know how we're going to maintain in the Northwest American Republic our power in creating some totalitarian society. What's going to happen in practice is that basically the people that don't want to be here and who really do like the United States and all its diversity, I don't know why anyone would, but presumably there will be a few, they will simply leave and go back to the United States. We're not asking to take over Miami or the rich people's condos in the Hamptons or Chicago, God help us, or anything like that.
Or New York City.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, fine. Look, if the people in New York or Atlanta, or if they want to have, you know, niggers out the wazoo and diversity and insane anti-smoking regulations and all the other aspects of liberal society, fine. They can have them there. They can also have things like the blight in Detroit and all the various things that come with Negro rule. But this part of the world is going to be ours, and there are going to be enough white people who want to come here to counterbalance any who leave. And so I'm not really worried about that.
Well,
anyway, going about Cuba.
Yeah, well, that's what I noticed down there. And I got to thinking about the Northwest American Republic, and the whole idea of homogeneity makes a much better country. Down there, of course, they're not racially homogenized. They're span everything from blonde and blue-eyed to jet black and kinky hair. But ideologically, they're all in the same boat. Also, because everybody is getting a fair cut of the action, so to speak, some a little more than others. But I never saw a ghetto. I never saw street people, drunks wandering around. All the things that you see in any American city, big or small.
I trust no knockout games.
Yeah, yeah. For
as we finally got publicity in the Jewish quarter of the New York City, only time it ever hit the air.
Oh, no. You're kidding me. They're not knocking out those poor Jews.
Yeah. All of a sudden, they knocked out a couple of Jews
really?
In Crown Heights.
No
and
kidding.
All of a sudden, you know, the knockout game is back in the news. It vanished for quite a while. And this is apropos of absolutely nothing, but I was surfing the net. Apparently, white people or white males have now found their version of the knockout game. They're attacking people with burritos. I'm not making this up. There's a whole series. This was off the Smoking Gun, which I think is, I know it's not totally a serious website, but a bunch of white guys have been arrested over the past 6 months for throwing burritos. One kid was arrested and charged with stoning passing cars with burritos, and one guy was arrested for battering his girlfriend with a burrito. That was a charge anyway. It wasn't battering. Basically threw a burrito at her. But apparently we're such wusses that that's our version of the knockout game. We attack people with burritos, I guess.
That's almost as funny as that father was going on a while ago with Trayvoning, where the kids were...
Is that where you get Trayvon to pull you on your skis?
Well, they were lying down in like a chalk outline. line.
Right, right, yeah. Okay, I saw that.
Oh, and they were lying down there in a hoodie with Skittles and some of that iced tea.
Yeah.
They were uploading these pictures to the internet.
The grape drank.
And I believe there was actually criminal investigation of some of those. I was mentioning in one of the RFNs, I think, a while back. I don't know if you remember the Jaina 6 thing a few years ago, but there was a little fad of white people hanging nooses everywhere and hanging monkeys, toy monkeys, Curious George and that sort of stuff. The FBI sent task forces looking to see who was hanging a child's toy with a twine noose in a school or a fire station. I don't know if there were ever any actual prosecutions. I mean, it's kind of like back in the day when I was hanging with some Klan types back in North Carolina, the FBI sent a special task force down from Washington to find out who had thrown a dead black snake on a nigger's porch. I know what this was in aid of or context of this was. I was talking about that publicity we got about the card in the mail, and I was pointing out that you shouldn't put anything in the mailbox without a stamp.
Yeah.
So I mentioned that they would probably send down a task force to find out who had put something in the mail without a 49-cent stamp. Not so much because they were going to send somebody to jail for 50 years, but because they just want to know who in this country harbors dissident thoughts, whose mind is not totally under control. And they wanted to put people in their databases. I'm going to have to go get something to drink if I'm going to do this.
Well, they...
I'll let you guys go on while I go find something.
Well, just going back to the whole thing, heretics, heretics, heretics. I go back to even Salem, where I forgot his name, but they were pressing him to try and get confession, and all he would say is, more stone. They were loading stone on his chest to get the confession. And just only thing he'd have to say is, more stone.
Yeah, I wish more people had courage like that. But there's some kid years ago that stuck a snake skin through the mail slot of somebody he didn't like, who shall remain nameless. And he got like 10 or 20 years for it. I mean, he had some serious jail time.
Who's this?
The kid down in Southern California, San Diego.
Oh, put a snake in a Jewish congressman's mail slot.
Yeah,
Alex,
yeah.
Alex, da, 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 da. I know who you're
talking about. Oh, yeah.
I know exactly who you're talking about, and I can't remember his name now.
Yeah, so you get a hell of a lot more time for throwing leaflets than you will for, shooting somebody in this country.
Especially if you got a white skin.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I think the average sentence for murder now is like 18 months. It's even less if you murder a child, but...
and time off for good behavior.
being politically incorrect will get you 10 to 20 easy. Ask Bill White.
Yeah.
Well, which most of the time means life.
Yeah.
Or if you touch money, if you do a really big heist, because in this society, money is power, and if you do something that takes a lot of money, that will get them pissed off, and they'll lock you up for 40 years. Like, we got this one prison correspondent out of ours who should be getting out in a few years, hopefully, but basically, he robbed a bank, and he has been in ever since I knew him, and he's done more time than a lot of guys I've known who have gone in and come out for homicide.
Right.
So, basically, there are two things in this society that only the powerful people in the suits will decide how much of it you get. That's money and justice. You must not help yourself to either.
Yeah.
Because they and they alone control the supply of those two things, money and justice. And if you take either of those things for yourself, you're infringing on one of their important monopolies, and they will come down on you.
Well, I think besides suppressing the wobblies, I think the FBI, wasn't the FBI first?
See if we can get into the red. Yep.
Well, I can't, which federal agency, the FBI or the Secret Service, but it was created to basically stop the bank robberies, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't really care about all the other robberies,
right.
But when you're robbing a bank, you're basically, like you said, taking the money from the big boys.
Right.
And they get upset about that. If you want to rob a 7-Eleven, they don't care.
Well, the FBI has jurisdiction over bank robberies because it's FDIC, federally insured.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's basically what they were originally called upon to do back in the Dillinger days when you had all these guys roaming back and forth between states and robbing banks. John Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's what got them going. They were, and then they branched out into suppressing the wobblies while they're at it. But
speaking of wobblies, one of the things I like about Washington State, when I first came to Washington, I lived in Centralia, Washington, and it's one of the few towns anywhere in this country, in the South or outside of it, that has a monument to a lynch mob. Veterans Day, November the 11th, 1919, there was a big gun battle between the American Legion and the IWW, the Wobblies in Centralia. Four of the Legionnaires were killed because basically the Wobblies just ambushed them during a parade. And that night they broke into the jail and dragged some Wobbly out and strung him up on a bridge just outside town, which now is a bridge over Interstate 5. You get to go over it. You know, it's not the original bridge. So it's interesting to see that there was actually a monument put up by the people of Centralia to the four American Legionnaires who were killed literally fighting communism in the streets of Centralia. And by the time I'd got there, I guess this would have been about the year 2000, somebody had figured out, well, this isn't really politically correct. We don't want to take this down because it's part of our town's history and, frankly, the only thing of any interest that ever happened in Centralia, Washington. And so he let the local AFL-CIO or whatever put up another little plaque nearby dedicated to the sons of unionized labor and all this mess. We have something up in Paulsbo, still do every year, called the Viking Fest. The bloom kind of went off the rose for me on that, though, when they had a nigger festivals queen, which is just absurd. But I think it's gotten really commercialized. It's become less and less Scandinavian folk heritage and more and more just kitsch.
But, excuse to sell something.
Yeah, last time we went up there was a few years ago, and they had like the Norwegian or Scandinavian dancing. I think it was like a Norwegian dance thing. And I noticed that all the dancers were all over 40. So, I mean, it's just, it's really unfortunate that a lot of the tradition don't seem to be getting passed down.
Back to Cuba. I didn't finish my thought there. The point is that people criticize the Northwest Imperative as unworkable for a lot of reasons. And one is that somehow it wouldn't be a viable community if it was all just racially conscious white people. And Cuba is a good example that if you get a lot of people who have the same ideology, and they all get fed on a regular basis, and they don't, not a lot of outside agitators, that they will get along really great and produce a fairly industrial, or not industrial, but industrious society. It's clearly based on ideology, not race. But if you got a bunch of people of the same race with the same ideology, then you're pretty bulletproof.
Well, it's National Socialist Germany being the ultimate example.
Thank you. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we were talking about Israel for a while.
Middle East and how it's going to, sooner or later, this endless war for endless war is going to bite them in the rear end.
Yeah. Well, it's been going 25 years now, so roughly, since the first Iraq thing happened in, what, originally in 1990.
Yeah, Desert Storm underneath Bush the Greater.
Yeah.
All to beat up on Israel's enemies under the guise of Project for a New American Century.
Right. Well, like I say, it's been almost a quarter of a century now, and it just keeps escalating and escalating, as sensible minds could have predicted at the time. And now we're in Afghanistan. Now we're going to have to go back into Iraq for the third time. We're in Yemen, although nobody admits it. We're in Libya, although nobody admits it. And it just goes on and on and on and on. And I'm just really curious, at what point will the United States simply not be able to maintain this endless cycle of war, because our infrastructure is crumbling over here, our economy is crumbling. There are already, for example, problems with refueling the Navy in places like Norfolk. They've had to hold off on certain maneuvers because refitting one of those ships after a cruise takes almost a year if it's something like an aircraft carrier, and we apparently just don't have the resources to do it anymore.
Well, that's the whole point. I think I've told you before about the book I read back in the mid-90s about the rise and fall of the great powers, and every European empire from Portugal right up to the British Empire, they collapsed when their military spending exceeded their gross domestic product, which makes sense, right? I.e. they're broke. They couldn't afford to pay the soldiers anymore, and so things rapidly fell apart. And our national debt exceeds the gross domestic product, I think. So trying to keep this massive military afloat, no pun intended, is, I mean, it's not going to work, right? At some point, when people quit picking up our IOUs, then everything will fall apart financially. We'll be toast.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've ever heard of this. Paul Krugman, the favorite economist of the liberal left in this country, he maintains quite seriously that it is possible to keep this up forever, that we can keep on floating bond issues, buying them with borrowed money, using that money to pay off the previous bond issues, and then come along a few years later and do the same thing again and again and again, which, in a weird sort of way, I suppose, might make some sense, but he's forgetting about the whole idea of usury and interest. So when you do it, when you run your economy like that, which is the way we've been running it for God knows how long, the interest keeps, you know, ramping the whole thing up and up and up and up, and all of a sudden you've got a national debt in $20 trillion or whatever it is right now, and at some point, you're just not going to be able to find anybody to loan you any more money.
Well, the only reason they're loaning us money now is because we got all the guns. But at some point, it's just going to fall apart because we won't be able to keep it up. We're destroying the flower of our young men and now women. That shows what kind of advanced country we are. We send women off to war. It just won't work. There's no money left. All the other countries know it. They're only taking our IOUs because they got a gun barrel in their face. But at some point, when that fear of us slips, mostly from the chaos internally in this country, people will just stop doing what we want them to do, like buying our debt, and things will just collapse fairly rapidly, and it's going to be ugly. But like I was telling you before, I'm telling you, the mass of people won't do anything until they have to. Until they get a boot up the, you know what, that they're not going to revolt. They're not going to move up here. They're not doing a goddamn thing because, and I'm going to quote somebody else, as long as there's beer in the fridge and shows on TV and the electricity's running or the cable bill's been paid, they won't do a damn thing. Mm-hmm. So I rack my brains for an answer, and I'm telling you, I don't think there is one.
As I've also said, you know, myself, when it happens, and it will happen in one form or another, it's going to be our 5% of the population versus their 5% of the population. The other 90% are just going to be spectators. And basically our attitude towards them is going to have to be, I'm referring of course to the white them, the non-whites of course are going to have to be removed from the Republic's territory, which by the way will get us in very good books with the white people who are just sitting there watching the whole thing on TV, because they will notice changes that they appreciate, like fewer black and brown faces on the street, like more job opportunities as these affirmative action employees who've been taking all the jobs disappear. But our attitude towards that 90% of white people who are just supine is going to have to be, look, we're doing this for you. Don't help the enemy. Stay out of our way. If you cannot help our side, at least don't help them. If you can't participate in your own liberation, at least stay out of our way while we liberate you. And since Americans are basically a herd-like people now who are used to being shepherded and herded this way and that, I think it probably will take a lot less effort than we think for us to take over the shepherd's crook, so to speak, and all of a sudden they won't be doing what the United States government tells them, they'll be doing what we tell them.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. In the street, singing songs and a carrying sign. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look.
Oh.
Over the weekend, I posted to the Thought Crime blog the complete text of an article written by a man named James Howard Kunstler. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with him, Kunstler is kind of my personal court Jew. He's the only Jew I will allow on any of my blogs or in any of my publications, because kosher or not, some of the things he writes are just so spot on, and he says what needs to be said so well that I believe we all need to read it. Yes, I know, he hates Southerners and Christians, and he's a Zionist who never says anything really critical of Israel, but what else do you expect? And yet Kunstler's view of what is happening around us is not only so cogent, but so well written that despite his race, I have no hesitation in recommending his blog to our people. Being Jewish, Kunstler has a kosher certificate that allows him to say out loud some things that other people would never be allowed to say in this society. This article from his blog that I posted on Sunday is one such. It's entitled, We Will Become ISIS. You will note that I myself have pretty much refrained from commenting on ISIS in any way because I refuse to shape my opinions to anyone's official version, even our own. And because any truthful comments I might make on the subject would be so badly twisted and distorted out of all context and meaning. Not only by our own goat dancers, but by the FBI and assorted enemy NGOs who monitor this podcast. And my words, thus twisted and distorted, would probably be resurrected in years to come to haunt me and put meanings in my mouth. But Kunstler has, to a degree, relieved me of that task. I'm going to read a few excerpts here. Being Jewish, Kunstler, of course, doesn't mention race, although he clearly understands the coded subtext of what he's saying here. Quote, The young men are out there somewhere in the country towns, but this society increasingly has no use or place for them, except in the army. There is absolutely no public conversation about the near total devaluation of young men in the economic and social life of the USA, though there is a near hysterical triumphalism about the success of young women in every realm from sports to politics to business, and to go with that an equal amount of valorization for people who develop an ambiguous sexual identity. There really is no local forum for public discussion in the flyover regions of the USA. The few remaining local newspapers are parodies of what newspapers once were, and the schools maintain a fog of sanctimony that penalizes thinking outside the bright side box. Television and its stepchild, the Internet, offer only the worst temptations of hypersexual stimulation, artificial violence, and grandiose wealth and power fantasies. There aren't even any taverns where people can gather for casual talk. Many of the remaining jobs out there are jobs that can be done by anyone, certainly the office work, but also the jobs with near zero meaning, minimal income, and no status in the national chain burger shacks and box stores. And young women are more reliably subject to control than young men jacked on testosterone, corn syrup, and Grand Theft Auto. But still, this only begs the question of what young men will do in such a deceitful system. And my guess is that they will shift their attention and activity from the mind slavery of the current Potemkin economy to the very monster we find ourselves fighting overseas. A domestic ISIS-style explosion of wrath, wrapped in an extreme ideology of one kind or another, replete with savagery and vengeance-seeking. The most dangerous thing that any society can do is invalidate young men. When the explosion of youthful male wrath occurs in the USA, it will come along at exactly the same time as all other benchmarks of order become unmoored, especially the ones in money and politics, which will shatter the faith of the non-young and the non-male, too. Also, just imagine for a moment the numbers of young men America has trained with military skills the past 20 years. Not all of them will be disabled with PTSD or mollified with rinky-dink jobs at the Walmart or lost in the transports of heroin and methadrine. The authorities will have no way to understand what is happening, and we are certain to endure a long season of violence and social chaos as a result. The reset from that will be an economy and a society that few now yammering at the Huffington Post or the Tea Party will recognize. That society, emerging from the ashes of the current matrix of rackets, will desperately need young men to rebuild, and there will be plenty of opportunity for them, although it won't feature fast cars, Kanye West downloads, or bottle service. End quote. I am now convinced that at some point in the foreseeable future, by which I mean a future that most of us now living will live to see, There are going to be long columns of pickup trucks and larger vehicles rolling across the North American continent, full of armed men cutting off heads. I am coming to the conclusion that this is inevitable, and that the future is now far more likely to be accurately portrayed in my novels than any alternate scenario. It is essential that we, by which I mean white Americans, control this process. The men in those trucks with those guns who are lopping off those heads need to be white, and the heads that they are lopping need to be the heads of those who are responsible for what America has become. There are times in history when a nation or society must sweat blood in order to survive, when certain identifiable groups of people must be completely removed by force from the political process, from the economy, and often from society itself. No, FBI guys, I am inciting to nothing. I am making an observation on 4,000 years of human history, which all scholars and educated men know to be true, but which they are usually afraid to say. That's when you're going to come for me, not when I have broken any of your stupid laws made by and for stupid people, but when the truth has become so utterly intolerable in America that you cannot allow even my tiny little weekly squeak of it to our tiny little audience. Now, those armed men in those convoys of pickup trucks who will one day roam this land need some purpose other than pure blood vengeance, as morally entitled to that as they will be. That purpose needs to be the creation of a white homeland for all of our people the world over. It can't be just mindless Mad Max-style carnage. They have to be fighting and dying and lopping those heads for something. Now, those devalued and invalidated and alienated young white men who will be riding in those trucks and lopping those heads are out there now. Your job, your duty, your imperative is to lead them to northwestfront.org, where they will find what they need. For God's sake, get on with it. We are almost out of time. And we are out of time for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194, or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Anaban. Freedom.
Well, this was for poor old Ireland, Uncle Bitter was their favorite.